You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome everybody, as you always are, here on Wednesdays now at 11 in the morning Pacific Standard Time and all over the world, wherever you are listening to our live broadcast. Today, another amazing guest. This is one of the best books I've read in really a long time, and I really do mean that. We are going to be talking to an amazing man who has really enriched the lives of so many people. He's going to share with us how he does that. And we're also talking about his book, Revolutionary Optimism, Seven Steps for Living as a Love-Centered Activist. Dr. Paul Zeitz is the man we are talking to today. And of course, we're going to tell you how you can get hold of his book, find out more about him. And he is talking about his transformation, what he has gone through, what he has learned. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Dr. Michelle. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, Dr. Zeitz. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I've been trying to get you for a while, and I got you finally. So I like to just jump right into it because we have so much great information for viewers and listeners today that we can cover about revolutionary optimism. Ooh, can you share with the audience who you are and what you do?
Thank you so much. Yes, hey. I'm happy to share. I'm a 62-year-old man. I've been married for almost 33 years.
Oh, Mazel Tov. That's great.
Good. Yeah, that's pretty good, right?
You made it.
Exactly, yeah. We celebrate that. And we have five sons and two daughters-in-law and two grandchildren. So we have an expanding family. We're very blessed.
Yes, you do.
And my wife's also a doctor. She does clinical medicine. And I took a path towards public health and preventive medicine, which was really looking at the health and well-being of all populations. Catered my career to that kind of higher level, not higher level, but big picture. Yeah. You know, looking at humanity as a whole.
Yes,
and doing solutions from that vantage.
Yes, beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, so we lived in Africa in the late 90s. I was working on the HIV/AIDS pandemic, and we actually left. We went with three small children, 4, 2, and 3 months. And then we came back with a fourth son who we adopted from Zambia. So,
bless your heart.
And then we had a fifth son after we returned. And so during my time in Zambia, I really had like an awakening, I would say. I realized that I was part of these systems that were not trying to solve the problem. I was there during the heydays of the AIDS crisis when economically productive parents, 15 to 44, were dropping dead, 1 out of 5. Developed at that time. It was unbelievable. You felt the dying fields. I called it a
heartbreak. Sure, of course.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking, I'm sure. I mean,
so I came back as an activist and I launched a Global AIDS Alliance, which was a node and a global movement. And I learned about international solidarity movement building. And I learned about advocacy, direct action, and lobbying on the Hill and influencing the media, all the components of it. And we won. We actually got President Bush to launch the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief and the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria. Which were, you know, over $120 billion has been spent on these from the U.S. government. People didn't think we could even get a billion.
Right.
And everyone was like, never, it's not possible. So this is my guiding star of, I've been laughed at, literally laughed at, told I was like, what I was calling for would never happen. And then it did. Goodness. And 21 years later, over 40 million lives have been saved. Not by me, but by the movement. But we created new institutions that did the job. So then I learned advocacy and I did global advocacy in the US and Europe and Africa. And I started working on other issue areas like climate emergency and ending childhood sexual violence, strengthening our democracy, racial equity, gender equity. all these different issue areas. And, you know, that's when I came up with the idea of creating and then launching Revolutionary Optimism into the world.
What a beautiful concept. Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing all that. And I know there's a lot more, and we could take up probably about half an hour of the show on your bio. But as we kind of roll through the book here and check out these 7 steps for living as a love-centered activist. And I think that is so cool. It's called Revolutionary Optimism. And again, Dr. Paul Zeitz is my special guest today. So, gosh, I mean, throughout the book, you're revealing these 7 steps for living as a love-centered being. And I think it's difficult in these days and times, more difficult than it has been in so long. And I was also blown away by your work, of course, with what's going on in the Middle East as well. And I just want to thank you so much for all that you have done. So we're going to talk about these steps for living as a love-centered activist. If it's cool with you, we'll just kind of go through them. Can you lay out those steps, just list them, and then what we'll do is we'll sort of get through each one, you know, on a sort of a limited basis, because again, we could do this for hours.
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, I developed Revolutionary Optimism and these 7 steps as a way of dealing with my own feelings of hopelessness and despair at times, anxiety about the state of our country and our world. And when I thought about the future for my grandchildren and future generations, I got really disturbed. Basically.
Oh, yes.
And many times I went into a freeze mode, or I pulled the covers over my head and felt paralyzed, and I felt like I couldn't do anything. So I wrote this for me.
Sure.
And it's working. So when it started working,
bless your heart.
I had an obligation to share it, and I will advise you in advance, as a physician, I need to do this, that it is contagious. So revolutionary optimism, bravery.
It is contagious.
It is contagious. So there's no cure. There's no vaccine or anything like that. So there's just the news.
Okay. All right. I love that.
Yeah. So the 7 steps, the first 3 steps are really work that we do ourselves in terms of it's go time, and starting off each day and recognizing that actually, we already are love-centered activists. I want to like really destigmatize it. People don't think they're love-centered, or they don't think they're activists. And so I kind of redefine that as any love-centered action counts, and anything that you're doing to take care of yourself and your well-being, even going to the dentist or whatever you do for yourself, a yoga class or however you go to nature, all that counts. And then caring for others in your family.
Yes.
And your children, your parents, your siblings, or whoever, all your loved ones. And then anything that you do that relates to the broader community. And then our nation and the world. So the circles of circles.
Yes, right.
Really open that up.
You talk about those circles of circles. You know, it's funny the way I end my show every night when I end my show, every day when I end my show. And what I always say is, it's very important for you to take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. And that's, you know, in keeping with what you just said.
Exactly. You know? So that gets you to step 2, which is self-liberation. Mm-hmm. And this is really to understand how our minds work. And we have this, I have, and I call it an inner dragon, this part of my brain that is my defense system, and it protects me. It keeps me safe when I get exposed to threats.
Sure.
And as a trauma survivor myself, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual violence at the hands of my father when I was a very young boy.
No.
I had an amnesic barrier for 40 years, no memory.
Oh my God.
And then, so it was this, you know, then I was able to receive the memories and go through a healing journey. But the point of this is that the dragon operates in all of us in different ways, though, depending on our experience.
Yes.
And so I offer some tools about understanding that and then learning how to create peace with your dragon and tame your inner dragon. And so it doesn't have to rule your mind.
Sure.
And then you can activate and create space for your higher self, your love-centered self, to really manifest more fully. Mm-hmm. And as that, and as you're doing that, you're, I give you practices for clarifying and exploring your life's purpose, your soul's purpose. So that as you lift out of the negativity of the inner dragon and the limitations that the inner dragon puts on us, then you figure out really what is your true calling? What is really your intuition calling you into?
Right. Beautiful. And we can also talk about some of the ways in which we can practice each one of these steps in order to really help us. So we'll move on, I guess, the third step. Here we go.
We're talking. The third step seems to be very aligned with you and your listeners in terms of, I call it accessing unified consciousness.
Yes.
That's the understanding that there is this kind of unity consciousness, some people call it, or collective consciousness. Jesus consciousness, people call it whatever they call it. And we've all had a taste of it. We've all had a taste of feeling that sense of interconnection. We sometimes feel it like at a birth of a new baby, or at a funeral when a loved one is passing, or sometimes in nature, that sense of like the awe of something beyond ourselves, you know, that great mystery, which is what I call it in the book. Yes. And so once you realize that you can, you've had that experience, you can work, and there are practices that you to have that experience, and you can practice that. It's like going to the gym. You learn how to access that other state of consciousness. And then I offer the idea and the opportunity to experiment with deploying it. So like I deploy that when I go into meetings, or I deploy that when I go into a protest. And sometimes if I'm getting triggered or I'm reacting to a set of circumstances, I then deploy my my periscope up to, this is just a small thing, bigger picture.
Right.
So it puts everything in context. So that those three steps are really our individual exploration and individual work. Then peace crafting at step four. That's the heartbeat of the book. And it's about how we relate to each other, like how you and I are relating, how I'm relating to your listeners, how we relate to each other in every situation, both private, personal, and in the workplace and in our activism and our movement building.
Yes.
So I created a four-part cycle, you know, to really practice. All these are, you know, things that I'm still working on myself. And I'm using the book as I am living into being a revolutionary optimist. Like, it's an ongoing journey.
Sure, exactly. And I love the peace crafting that you suggest. And we can talk more about that as well in depth. But I love that chapter. That was amazing because it also pertains to communication and listening and how important it is to think before we speak. That whole thing. So thank you for that. I do digress. So moving on to Imagineering, right? That is.
Yeah. So that once, so with peace crafting, we're working on being in the world now and using love speech, building trust, building a beloved community.
Yeah.
And then the idea here is to really unlock political imagination. So I create, I offer this idea of Imagineering and radical imagination and our visions. What do we want to see the future to be? Yes. And sometimes ourselves or our society or our culture kind of limits our imagination, and we don't think anything's possible. We think we have to accept lesser of two evils, for example. We think that's all that's possible. And so this step is really important to unlock all that. And even if you don't think of yourself as a visionary, or you don't think you have any political imagination, there are games in there to practice. And also to understand the other people that you're around, maybe who are identifying as visionaries or do want to share their vision. So you can be a better listener for that. Manifesting the visions. It's about building love-centered movements. And a big important theme is that we are in this together, and we need to explore ways to do collective movement and collective action to bring all the parallelism, all the silo into joint action, because that's how we can really bring our visions forward.
Oh boy, is that true? And you know, we see a lot of dragons out there, and it's just, it's so hard to get people to not allow those inner dragons to fight and to, you know, and we'll talk a little bit more about that too, but it's just, I love your message about peaceful change, you know, unifying. How can we do that? I mean, that is, how do we get the people to do that? And we'll talk about that as well. So moving on, sparking peaceful revolutions. What's that all about?
So the theory, sparking peaceful revolutions is, I'm really basically inviting everyone to join and be part of peaceful revolutions.
Yeah.
That I think are urgently needed.
Yes.
My idea is that the violent revolutions are already unfolding with great velocity and great intensity. And they're taking us down a path of inevitable suffering and destruction. And that includes the gun violence on our streets. It includes the mass incarceration. It includes the mass shootings that we're experiencing all over the United States. It includes the military-industrial complex, the wars that are raging, the bombs that we drop on people all over the world. And our whole way of being is very violent. And also extractive capitalism, like the climate emergency, is fueled by we need to control everything, and we can just keep extracting and taking whatever we need to build our machinery. And that is actually threatening human survival.
Gotcha.
So all these things are healable.
Absolutely.
So sparking peaceful revolution is very practical. It also helps people explain like what's going on with the Palestinian liberation movement, for example, and all the encampments. It gives you a context for understanding what peaceful resistance is like, why people are doing peaceful resistance. It explains the different roles that people are playing and the intention. So, and it helps you figure out your role. And that doesn't mean you have to be part of being on the streets or doing an encampment, but you can do peaceful resistance from your home or your workplace. And I just give you all those different options. Ooh. It's like a Chinese menu of ways to engage.
Oh, it's really true. And I love that part too in your book. We've talked a lot on this program, you know, about, well, quantum consciousness, I guess. I've talked to scientists and physicists and all that, but we are all connected, you know, through the field, and our prayers and our conscious thought and sending out love is so important. And as you said, we can all do that in our own backyard, our own home or whatever, but
exactly.
And spreading the word through groups, friendships, whatever it is. So important to do that. So the final step here, we really got to move into that. Can you talk a little bit?
Yeah. So the final step is called unifying.
Yes.
And after all that work of ourselves and all that peace crafting and then all the movement building, revolutionary peaceful resistance that we're participating in, we're unifying, and it's at two levels mainly. One is unifying within, and it's like creating our life where we've clarified, or we're experimenting with understanding what our soul's purpose is, and we've been successful in creating our life to be aligned with that as much as possible. I know for myself, I spent many decades having an inner sense, an inner truth, or an inner compass drawing me in a certain direction, and reality was completely dissonant. Like I was not actually manifesting that in my own life. And so then it's about unifying collectively.
Yes.
And it's about like understanding that we are all connected. And I have a practice in there where you look through interpartisan lens. Can we connect through an interpartisan? Can we connect interspiritually, meaning all religions and all non-believers? And can we connect interracially across all genders and, explore, with whatever we're doing, how do we bring in all of those parts of us so that we learn how to connect and be with all people as part of this new way of being?
Boy, you know, that's beautifully said, Paul. And it is. It's It's work. It's self-work, self-centered work, mindfulness. And we'll talk a little bit about the brain-heart coherence and how we can get into that as well. By the way, my special guest today is Dr. Paul Zeitz. We're talking about his latest book. It's called Revolutionary Optimism. What a concept, huh? 7 Steps for Living as a Love-Centered Activist. I'd like to just sort of, if we could, Paul, go back and review a little bit. It's go time, step number one, and how we can ask ourselves, what can I do to serve today? Just to begin, what can I do? I mean, this is a really important point that you share. What is this step all about?
Yeah, so it's about like choosing to explore or experiment with living on the path of love. And that is like asking the question, what would it look like if every step, every breath, every action was love-centered? Mm. And it's like a game, you know, it's like an exploration. Yes, and for me, it's sometimes, especially when it's a cloudy, rainy day or cold, you know, it's like, I don't want to get out of bed. And I like, okay. It's go time. Wake up. And then I'm grateful that I'm alive. So there's a gratitude part of that. And the sky is blue or the sky is gray, whatever it is, at least there is a sky and it's something awesome.
There you go. Outside,
it's beyond me and my comprehension. And then it's like, okay, how can I serve today? And that's that 4 circles of service that we talked about.
Yes. Yes.
I also introduced the idea of imagining future generations.
Oh, right.
And, I have a 2-year-old granddaughter, so I frequently imagine her at 2100, the year 2100.
Sure.
And she'll be about 80. And I imagine her sending blessings back to her ancestors, to me and to all of us.
Yes.
Thanking us for all that we've done and all the love-centered actions that we're already taking and that we will take in the days ahead.
Oh, that's
and, beautiful. Because that is like creating the possibility that she might actually live in peaceful coexistence in a stable environment and all that. Like I'm standing for that possibility that all of our descendants will be able to have that opportunity that we have.
Yes. It's so important.
That's part of it's go time and making commitments and like how commitment is magic.
Yes. Isn't it wonderful to be able to sort of go into imagery and see our loved ones, see our children or grandchildren, and you know, sort of image them living in a peaceful world, or you know, happily with AI, whatever. I don't want to go there. Don't get me started. But no, in a peaceful way. And isn't it wonderful to go into imagery and see them living with those wonderful?
You said AI. I thought, oh my God, we could create.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like virtual. My granddaughter at 80, and I could do a meme about that or something.
There you go. There you go. Exactly.
You opened up my imagination with that comment.
Oh, good. Love it. Beautiful. And it works. So when we're doing the self-liberation step, we've got to just dealing with that inner dragon. You talk about a situation where your inner dragon has reared its ugly head many times, as we all have. So we have to be mindful of that. You were ordained, by the way, as a Song of Songs rabbi.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's beautiful.
Thanks.
But then while participating with protesters, you found yourself encircled, which to me, I can't imagine, by a sea of Palestinian and Arab people from all over the U.S. So it was a sort of a scary or aha moment for you to sort of, how did you manage that and harness your inner dragon?
Yeah. Thank you for connecting that, those parts of the book. Yeah. So step 2 is self-liberation. And one of the big parts of that is understanding that we get triggered, that we react, that we have this reactivity built into us. And that we, all of us have experienced some form of trauma or loss, and we, our brains are then wired to respond to that with standard responses, fight, flight, freeze, or appease. And I talk about all those ways of responding. And then I talk about managing our triggers. And like, I like to say that I'm triggered by everything, everyone, all the time. So I have to manage my triggers all the time.
Sure.
And I am always like practicing, you know, speaking and being from my highest self, not my triggered place.
Beautiful.
And the example that you gave of, I was talking, I was at the March for Palestine, which happened, I think, in November of last year. It was the largest gathering of Palestinian and Arab protesters calling for the liberation of the Palestinian people and for peaceful coexistence. And it was in the heart of Washington, D.C. And I went and I was with my sons, but we got separated and I was like hanging out and I was just sitting there. And all of a sudden, like the Hollywood movies of the Islamic jihadist terrorists were like flashing in my mind. And I went into like a inner dragon fear response.
Right.
I was like aware enough to be able to watch it happen. And I watched myself pull back. I watched myself like want to run. And I like, it was like, then I said, okay, close your eyes. And I closed my eyes. I did a breathing practice, which is part of step three, unified consciousness. And I did a hallelujah chant, it's a one word, a universal word, maybe, or many people connect with that word. And I did a repeat of it, like able to calm myself down. I was like, calm down, you inner dragon. Like, I opened my eyes and I saw something completely different in the same exact location. I saw the beauty of the tapestry of the diversity of humanity. I saw these people speaking their truth freely and openly in the heart of Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And it was a beautiful moment of possibility, because that's what the vision of a healthy democracy would be.
Right.
That people have that right, free assembly and free speech. Sure. And even if I didn't agree with them, or even if I was upset by what they said, or I reacted to it, I was able to step out of that and like see, you know, a bigger story about the beauty of it. And I could have missed the moment. That's I could have ran and not seen all that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. How wonderful to be able to embrace all that and see both sides and be yin yang and feel the energy on each side. And here you are, an ordained rabbi. And, you know, the people of Israel, we're all suffering. By the way, there's an amazing interview that I wanted to share with you. And I'll talk to you, you know, about that a little bit later down the line. But Netanyahu does an interview with Dr. Phil.
No, really?
Yeah, one of my pals in the media. And it's brilliant. It's really well done. Because Dr. Phil's a shapeshifter too, you know. He can go with different types of, you know, thought processes and understand both and many, that kind of thing. And you do talk about being a shapeshifter in your life and how we can manage that as well.
So, yeah, that's definitely a part of step two, self-liberation, which is this idea that as we explore how we want to serve and then we kind of explore what our soul's purpose is, it's like, okay, not to have it all figured out from now in perpetuity. It's like it's part of life's journey, which is to be discerning and experimenting, deploying a phase of life where I'm doing it this way or that way. And then like saying, okay, it's aligned or it's not. And then keep playing, keep creating yourself, shape-shifting. And it's really helpful. Even right now, I'm going through a shape-shifting phase because I just launched my book, Revolutionary Optimism.
Right.
I'm like, it's like a new identity, a new perspectives that I'm sharing with the public.
Sure.
And it's been, part of it has been challenging for me. And when I realized, Paul, I just said, Paul, calm down. You're just shape-shifting.
Talk to yourself now. Right.
Like, it's like you wrote in your book to embrace shape-shifting, not to resist it. And part of it is like embracing uncertainty and embracing the power of not knowing. Because I don't know what's going to happen with revolutionary optimism then.
Right.
I can't know, and that's okay.
It's okay to not know. It's okay. And yeah. It helps to tame our inner dragon that way, too. By the way, in case you guys just joined me here, I'm speaking with the famous Dr. Paul Zeitz. He's the author of an amazing book, and I really recommend you guys get it. Revolutionary Optimism, 7 Steps for Living as a Love-Centered Activist. Really helping out your inner self, helping out others, those around you who you love. And just really trying to access that unity consciousness. I always have hard with that word. Have a hard time. So we can all sort of become on the same page. Of course, we will not ever, because we are all raised and we all have triggers in different ways. But nonetheless, it's a beautiful book to help you, access the unity and the beautiful, peaceful consciousness of all. Let's talk about step 3. You talk about as being a revolutionary optimist that we can activate unify consciousness, not only when we're sitting alone, we talked about that briefly, in the kitchen table, but also, out there with others. We can get together with organizers and educating others. So it's sort of hard to get started. How can we maybe start doing those kinds of things?
Yeah, so I don't think I shared this in the book, actually, but one of the practices that I do is that I imagine myself as a secret heart, a secret love bundle, a secret bundle of love energy or the love force, that's in my body. And so I go into any space and I imagine that that's my role in the space. And that I then am circulating love in any space. So it's a way of serving the space and lifting love and seeing everyone as their highest selves.
Yes.
So that's my way of accessing unified consciousness when I go into a meeting or I go to an event at the White House or I go to an event on Capitol Hill or I'm in the European Union. And then I'm just like, if I'm not speaking or in a particular role, then I just sit there and that's the presence that I'm bringing forward.
That is beautiful. And, of course, as a medical person, a medical doctor, you can keep yourself pretty healthy by going into that heart space, can't you?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think there's an energetic healing that happens. It's as we heal the trauma that sometimes gets trapped in our bodies.
Yeah.
And there's ancestral trauma and experienced trauma, and just watching what's going on in the world is traumatic. I mean, literally, like turning on your social media feed or watching the news for 5 minutes is traumatic. It's like seeing all this violence and all this pain and suffering. It's just overwhelming.
Yes.
So.
It really is.
I recommend technology holidays and social media holidays and also like knowing that you're reacting to it with a trauma response.
Right.
Your inner dragons are being awakened.
Oh, yeah.
And activated. And then that leads to separation and division.
Yes. And
closes you down from this love-centered aspect of yourself.
Yeah.
Then you have to really. It's choices, actually. We all have to make these choices.
We sure do. And you guys can also find out about accessing the breath-heart connection and the hallelujah practice and the laughing yoga tool. I love that one. That's really great. So there's so many tools in this book, by the way, that you can access. A revolutionary optimism, Dr. Paul Zeitz. We're going to talk more about some of those tools in a little bit, hopefully if we have time. But so we're accessing unity and unifying consciousness. There I go again.
Yeah.
Now we're going to go to step 4, which is peace crafting. And you suggest that is the guiding star on the compass of revolutionary optimism. And I really like that. So what are some of the ways that we can practice peace crafting?
So the four-part cycle of peacecrafting is like a circle that's rolling around in my head.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm like living it, and as part of practicing being a revolutionary optimist. So the first thing is being a listening friend. So it's really learning how to listen and really attentively listening.
Yes.
And just by listening to other people, it can kind of calm the inner dragon, my own and their own, and so that we can really have a better connection.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I have a practice in there which I love, because I like to talk, in case you hadn't noticed. But I have a practice in there called wait. Why am I talking? Wait.
Yes.
So in a group setting, and I think I want to say something, I have a little pause button that says wait. And then question, like, is my being quiet at this point creating more space for others to speak their truth? And or is it better for me to keep listening so that I can make sure that what I say is love speech and uplifting to everyone there? Or sometimes be quiet. Let's stay quiet.
Yeah.
It's okay to stay quiet. And that can also, your energy can be part of the conversation without you actually using your words. And then it's about embracing multiple perspectives.
Yes.
I have found in this polarized environment that we're in that people have a point of view or a perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that it's right and it's the truth. And it's my way or the highway perspective.
Their truth.
Their truth. Or my truth. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
And so I used to be that way too. So I know what that's like. so I also understand that I really have evolved from in thinking that really there's 8 billion people on the planet and there's probably 8 billion perspectives, because we all have our own DNA. We all have our own life experience. We have our own, you know, journey. And it's like, okay, we don't have to agree. I'm not saying we're not seeking agreement here. We're just, it's an invitation to explore and learn and listen.
Yes.
And I also find it really funny because people always tell me what my perspective is.
Oh, they do, you're don't this, they?
Or you're that. They label me and they tell me what I think.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wow. How do you know? Because I don't even know myself. Right. I'm actually evolving. And I'm I'm not what I was yesterday even.
Right.
And I have multiple perspectives in my mind because I'm still ruminating or I'm still exploring.
Yes.
So then you go into love speech. And this is an important one and a... Maybe it's the Holy Grail. I don't know. Because we hear other people talking and we react. We get triggered and then we lash out. We say something negative. We diminish the other person. We shame them. Even if we don't mean to, sometimes our words can have that effect.
Yes.
And so I offer the practice of love speech and the idea that every word, every utterance is a way of uplifting the other. Now that's like a practice. So, you know, I had a fight with my wife the other week and I said something kind of nasty and I was like, where did that peace crafting cycle go? And then we started laughing. So it's like, you know, I use it as an awareness tool and I don't beat myself up about it either. You know, we are human. And lastly, it's about building trust.
Yes.
And in my life, I had this perception that trust an on-off switch. Like, trust this organization or I don't trust that organization.
Right.
And it would end up limiting who I could connect with.
Sure.
And so my friends and I, we created something called a trust-o-meter and
made
it a dynamic where I love everyone unconditionally and I don't have to trust you.
Yes.
I might not trust you at all.
Yes, true.
And sometimes healthy boundaries are needed and for safety and detoxifying the space, but also it's like it keeps the possible trust open so that it can go up or down with anyone, anywhere. And, you know, it's like I'd like to have that stand of, well, maybe I can rebuild trust with you or your org or whatever.
Right. And you're opening yourself to listening to their truth. And I call it lovingly allowing others to have that truth. And, you know, when they have their own perspective and you don't feel it in your gut or your heart, you know, intuitively it doesn't feel right, but I guess allowing, you know.
I love that. Lovingly allowing. That's a beautiful phrase. I really
thank you.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that so much. You also mentioned how all human beings, and this is something else, I think in keeping with what we're saying, they're living with aspects of shame. I mean, we all have shame. Most of us have shame. And people say to me in my chats, you know, and some of the authors, some of the psychologists, well, narcissists don't have shame. It's like, well, why do you think they're narcissists? That's a survival mechanism. They have more shame than anyone. But getting back to the point here, you know, we have to be aware of those words that can activate shame, you know. But as you just mentioned, our words could be affirming and validating and uplifting and, you know, just being mindful about how we speak.
Yeah. Also, I offer, just building on your point, I do think shame is, everyone has shame. Shame is part of the human psyche. Yeah. It's part of that, the way our brains operate.
Yeah.
And there, if our inner dragon and our defense system is ruling the roost, then it's probably shaming us. It's telling us we're no good, we're not good enough, what we're doing doesn't matter. All these kind of messages that the inner dragon puts out, it's creating shame. It's creating the feeling of shame within us.
Yes.
And then we end up speaking that to others. You know, we shame others, we minimize others, and as a compensation, like you said about the narcissist.
Oh, sure.
And so, absolutely. Practice, and it's what you said, it's uplifting language, it's seeing the other as their highest self and recognizing the power of your words. And this is something I've had to learn, like I've had to learn impact of my words is my responsibility, even if it wasn't my intent. So I might be saying something from a perspective of efficiency, and it really is, but it ends up shaming the other, and I didn't mean that, but it had that impact. So I'm responsible.
No, exactly.
I need to figure out
how
to communicate in a way that doesn't have that. Now that other person is also 100% responsible for managing their own triggers and all the work that they need to do, but that's on them, you know?
Sure it is, you know, and it's beautiful to explore. Why did I say that? Why did I need to say that? Why did I outburst? What am I defending? What, you know?
Right.
By the way, everybody, my special guest, Paul Zeitz, he is a medical doctor. His latest book, Revolutionary Optimism, 7 Steps for Living as a Love-Centered Activist. And we've been just briefly touching, you know, on the 7 steps, give you a taste. You know, and also it's a workbook. It is a teaching book. There are tools that you can use at the end of each really point or step that are beautiful. And they really are effective, and they are whatever you want to call them. But I think they're brilliant, your steps, Paul. Let's talk about Imagineering. Ooh, I like that one. I like that one because we can really get into that headspace, can't we?
Yeah, the Imagineering was actually a word coined by Walt Disney, and he created that concept as the idea of imagining something and then making it happen. And he did that in his film and in his experiential adventure places like Disney World and Disneyland. Yeah. So I have recreated it in the context of revolutionary optimism as basically 2 main parts. One is, first part is unlocking our imagination, radical imagination, and our visions for the kind of future that we want to see. And also recognizing that we have stories, mainly from the inner dragon or from our family or from our culture, that wants us to limit our imagination and limit our visions.
Is that true?
It's like that oppression that we're seeing outside is actually operating within our minds. And we actually don't have to accept that the status quo is, we can We don't have to accept that lesser of two evils is the only way forward.
Yes.
We can create alternative possible realities, alternative possible futures. And Beautiful. The more I talk about this,
yeah.
Michelle, the funniest thing is that I'm not the only one that has these big visions of healing and transformation and peaceful coexistence. Actually, a lot of people have it. And they start sending me all their ideas, which I...
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
So yeah. I think it's like there's this, we have this hidden part of ourselves that I'm trying to create spaces where let it out and it's okay. But then translating it into, it's not about doing it myself or oneself. It's about collective action and movements is my expertise and my focus. So I do offer a second part of the book, which is 10 best practices for love-centered movement building. And then I really help the reader figure out what their role could be in all these different things that I'm introducing.
Exactly.
And movements can happen at the community level, at the school level, at the, within the workplace. It's not like, it doesn't have to be international and global solidarity movements.
Cool.
It could be connected to that, but it doesn't have to be. So it's movements can happen literally everywhere and anywhere.
Boy, they sure can. Beautifully speaking. About also sparking peaceful revolutions and step number 7, unifying. And I'm sort of clustering those two together because we only have a few minutes left. Wow, this has gone so quickly. But maybe we can just summarize how, and those are, you know, those are really important is the.
Yeah, so sparking peaceful revolutions is really about once you're in movements and you have a commitment to see some change in the world, it's about moving into direct action and peaceful resistance, nonviolent peaceful resistance.
Yes.
And it explains that it's not all about being on the street. It's about any role that you can play with peaceful resistance. You can do that from your home or your workplace. And there, I just unpack it a little bit. And I give people different pathways of engagement. And I think I help explain what's going on because I don't think people are understanding what's going on with the Palestinian liberation movement or the climate activists. It gives you a sense of where these folks are coming from. It's a love-centered place for 99% of them, in my view.
No, it is.
And lastly, unifying just quickly is about unifying within, like unifying our whatever we've discerned our soul's purpose to be, with actually how we've created our life, like aligning all that, unifying all that. And that's taken me decades to get to that. And so I wanted to offer fast people ways to do that faster than it took me.
Well,
and then it's our collective unifying and the opportunities we have to heal the broken democracy and heal all the other ways that we interact with each other.
Wow, that's beautifully said. And as you say in the beginning of your book, you wish you had this book 20 years ago, but I guess we all have our journey, right? We have to go through our own journey to learn. So
we do. And I wish I had it at 15 and 30 and 40. And even I would have taken it at 60 because it's like helping me create my life now, no matter what phase of life. Yeah. I wanted to offer it to help people leapfrog forward. So they didn't have to go through 50 years of torture.
Right. And thank you for that. And in this book, Revolutionary Optimism, you will read about 7 steps for living as a love-centered activist. And my special guest, Dr. Paul Zeitz. What's the best way folks can find out more about you and get your book, Dr. Zeitz?
Thank you so much. Yes, please go to www.revolutionaryoptimism.com. You can buy the book there through Amazon. And you can also then get access to our companion kit for those that want to take love-centered action. And that includes a journal and workbook and daily messages of inspiration and all kinds of other ways that we want to support everyone that's exploring revolutionary optimism.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being here on the couch with me today. I sure appreciate it, Dr. Zeitz. It was really an awesome interview.
Really thank you so much. Great to meet you. And thanks for all your great questions.
You too. Thanks for all you do. All right, everybody. That's it. Gosh, the show went so fast today. Thanks for tuning in and appreciate it. As I always say, do take care of yourself first. Then you'll be great for others and the world. Have a beautiful day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.